Chapter 6, Beyond Brockport. Camp Abilities Expands. A quote by Peter, a camper at Camp Abilities in Wasilla, Alaska. Only 360 days until I can come back. Photo description. Camp Abilities Alaska coaches and athletes on a peak in Alaska. I stood on the platform of a stage in Alaska sharing about Camp Abilities. In 2000, the camp at Brockport was humming along, by all measures a great success, when I went to speak at a special education conference in January in Anchorage. The parents and teachers attending were quite interested in the whole idea of Camp Abilities. One parent raised her hand. How do we get our children involved? I paused a moment. Well, we might have room for one or two children from Alaska at our camp in Brockport. That did not sit well with the mother. I don't want to have to send my child from Alaska to New York to experience a sports camp. That just doesn't seem fair. She had a good point, after all. Brockport is over 4,000 miles from Anchorage, Alaska. As I glanced around the room, I could see that others agreed with her. I wasn't quite sure how to respond. There was a good reason to expand. Each year at Brockport, we had campers from around the country, from Alaska, Texas, Maryland, and Connecticut. But to accommodate these out-of-state campers, I had to put children from Brockport and neighboring towns in western New York on the waiting list. That bothered me. When I was growing up, many of my good friends were at camp with me, so I knew the value of children going to camp with down-the-street friends. Children who are blind or visually impaired benefit by associating with others facing the same challenges, and their experiences can be especially valuable lessons when shared with friends and neighbors from home. I know a sports camp is a perfect place to make those connections, so I didn't have to be convinced that expansion was a good idea. Although I didn't have an immediate answer for the mother who asked the question, another helping angel came into my life that day, Margaret Weber. Margaret ran an organization called Alpine Alternatives, running week-long summer camps on a beautiful lake in Wasilla, Alaska, for kids with disabilities. I'd be happy to devote a week to kids with visual impairments, she spoke up, and this is how Camp Abilities began to expand outside of Brockport. That year, we worked with Alpine Alternatives to start a new camp in Wasilla. Camp Abilities, Alaska. Camp Abilities in Wasilla involved a lot of logistics. The local Lions clubs were instrumental, flying children to camp from Fairbanks, the Aleutian Islands, and Kodiak Island. Because the lakeside camp had lacked the sports facilities we needed, each day we had to take buses to Palmer High School in the next town over to do biking, tandem biking, beat baseball, goalball, track and field, and swimming. We had lunch in Palmer, and then we returned to the lakeside camp for the evening activities. I have to say, the kids were quite hardy. They had no qualms about swimming in the cold lake at night. Margaret's funding was sufficient to bring 10 of our best staff to Alaska for the opener, including Monica Lepore and her 12-year-old daughter, Maria, who had been working alongside Camp Abilities staff in Brockport since she was 7. Megan O'Connell and Amanda Tepfer, my first graduate assistants, also came. We soon discovered some really interesting cultural differences. For example, my wife Katrina was trying to get to know a girl named Tatiana and asked her about her orientation and mobility classes. We simply assumed Tatiana had mobility lessons to learn how to cross streets and become independent. "Who teaches your mobility?" Katrina asked her. "What's mobility?" Tatiana said. "You know, how you get around on the streets where you live," Katrina explained. "We don't have streets where I live," answered Tatiana. Tatiana lived in a native village where everybody either flew in or took a boat in, and they had no roads. It was a big eye-opener for all of us. Tatiana realized she would have to learn how to navigate roads and sidewalks in Anchorage and Wasilla, and we recognized how unfamiliar we were with the native culture. Another camper that year was Hansen, who lived in a small village in the Aleutian Islands. He was a really good athlete and could throw a discus like a professional, so I couldn't believe it when I learned he had never taken a single physical education class. "How did you become such a good athlete, Hansen?" He told me that in his village, where everyone fished for a living, there were, of course, lots of fishing boats. He and his friends would often jump in the water and swim around the boats. When he wasn't in the water, he was walking everywhere because his village had no cars. Imagine kids in the lower 48 thinking that not having a car was an advantage. All of this activity, the constant swimming, walking, and fishing, helped contribute to his athleticism. We had experienced and creative camp cooks who liked to work with themes such as Mexican food night, Italian food night, or Chinese food night. Tommy, a wonderful, upbeat 11-year-old, had low vision and couldn't see details, but he could see some contrasting colors. We were having Mexican night, and everybody was sitting around eating delicious food and special Mexican decorations. We had red punch, a kind of non-alcoholic sangria, and there were also some very nice red candles on the tables. At one point, Tommy picked up a candle and started to drink it, thinking it was the red punch. Thank goodness the wax put out the flame before it got to his mouth. It really taught me a lot about making sure we set up the tables correctly with no safety hazard. It scared him, but luckily he didn't get too frazzled. One of the traditions at the Alaska Camp Abilities has become a hike through Hatcher's Pass. It's a breathtakingly beautiful area with a gold mining museum and numerous trails to the goal, a cross on the top of the mountain. I've completed the hike several times over the years, but my most memorable was when I came back to help in the fifth year. Among the hikers that year were Sherelle and Mindy, two campers from Kodiak Island who had cerebral palsy in addition to their visual impairments. They both walked slowly, one used crutches, and the other had recovered from surgery the year before and walked slowly. Due to these barriers, the staff assumed that Sherelle and Mindy wouldn't progress further than the end of the paved trail. So they had done for the past several years, they put up a sign there that read, "Congratulations, you made it to the top." In fact, it was not even a third of the way to the top. I wasn't feeling well that day, so I decided to walk with Sherelle and Mindy and their counselors, one of whom was my student, Laura. I knew they would move along slowly and maybe get only halfway up, and that's all I felt able to do that day. When we walked past the opening to the gold mine and then to the end of the pavement part of the road, we arrived at the congratulations sign. Sherelle and Mindy high-fived each other and said, "Yay, we did a great job!" Just then, we heard the voices of our other hikers over our walkie-talkies. "Camp Abilities made it to the top of the mountain!" Loud cheers rose from the group with lots of whistling and clapping. Confused for a moment, Sherelle and Mindy turned to each other and said, "We're part of the Camp Abilities. We can go to the top too." Sherelle picked up her crutches and we started out over the snow and across an icy creek on our journey upward. I had misgivings, but I couldn't very well say no because I had told them when they started they can go as far as they wanted. Besides, I was with one of my students and felt that it would be a terrible lesson for her to witness if I told the girls they had to turn around. A Camp Abilities group eventually passed us walking the opposite way and asked, "Where are you going?" I told them we intended to keep climbing because Sherelle and Mindy wanted to continue. Soon, we reached a big boulder field full of rocks and mud that rose straight up. It was the only way to the top. Sherelle dropped her crutches, and then she and Mindy scooted, rolled, climbed, and pulled and pushed their bodies through the mud and over the rocks. The pace was excruciatingly slow, and they were both exerting themselves with all their might. It brought tears to my eyes to see their determination to do what their peers had done. After about an hour on the straight up part, we arrived at the cross. Sherelle and Mindy were screaming, thrilled they had reached the top. I doubt I have ever felt such elation for the accomplishment of a camper. This was a true testament to perseverance and tenacity. It was almost 9 p.m. when we turned around, but fortunately, in Alaska during the summer, it is still daylight at 9, we were getting very hungry, and one of the campers had a large bottle of prune juice in her backpack. We shared this delicacy before we left for the descent. That was the absolute best prune juice I ever tasted. It took us a long time to retrace our steps down the mountain. We scooted and rolled and literally just inched our way until we got to the pavement where we could walk down to the bottom. When we finally reached the parking lot at 10:30 p.m., a bus filled with Chinese tourists was just pulling in. Pointing back at the mountain, Sherelle and Mindy excitedly told them, "We're with Camp Abilities for Kids Who Are Blind. We made it to the cross on that mountain up there." The tourists started clapping and cheering in disbelief. We had taken two buses, one of which was still there waiting for us with our hot dogs and chili. We hungrily devoured every last bit. The next day, Sherelle and Mindy told everybody about their experience of making it to the top. They didn't wash their clothes. They laid them out on a large rock to show everyone how muddy they were. The next night, when Lions clubs from around the state came to camp, Mindy and Sherelle got up and told their story, proudly showing off their muddy clothes. There was not a dry eye in the place. Every Lion was so moved that from that night on, Lions clubs across Alaska made Camp Abilities their statewide project. This means that every Lions club in the state provides money for flights, other transportation, as many children travel very far, and all the expenses of camp. In the seventh year of the Alaska camp, I had a special interaction with a camper named Peter. A native Alaskan, a high school wrestler, and blind, Peter had attended camp from its first year. He would play his guitar and sing Terry Kelly's The Power of the Dream for all the campers, and we cheered when he played it because we all knew how much the song and the camp meant to him. On the last day, as always, a bittersweet time, we held the award ceremony at 1 p.m., and then parents started taking their children home. Tears flowed as we were all enveloped by hugs. Friends promised to stay in touch. At 3 p.m., Peter's parents had not arrived yet, so after he said goodbye to his last few friends, he helped us clean up. By the time everything was packed up at 5 p.m., Peter's parents still hadn't arrived. I asked him if they were running late. "I told him to come after 5 o'clock," Peter told me. I didn't want the time to end. I wanted to spend every minute here that I could. When we told him the dates for the next year's summer camp, he started to cry. Then he turned to me and grabbed my shoulders. "Lauren, thank you so much for starting this camp. I've never had so many good friends. I love the sports, the music, everything. I feel like I'm myself here and only here. I don't know what I would do without it." Then he brightened. "Lauren, only 360 days before I can come back." Peter's words lodged in my mind and reverberated for days afterwards, along with words I'd heard from the other campers about how camp had changed the games for them. It had changed their own expectations about themselves, as well as the expectations held by their families, teachers, coaches, and counselors. When Peter counted down the days until he could return, I knew that this camp had done much more than introduce him to sports. It had introduced him to a whole new life. It's for people like Peter and Sherelle and Mindy, for the parents who raised their hand, for the angel helpers who stood up, that I decided to create additional venues for Camp Abilities. Children who are blind or visually impaired can't excel if they aren't given opportunities. Providing those opportunities is my life's calling. Camp Abilities Arizona. Megan O'Connell, my first Camp Abilities graduate assistant in Brockport, had gone on to teach at the Arizona School for the Deaf and Blind, which had a foundation run by Murray Everson called the Arizona Blind and Deaf Children's Fund. In 2004, Megan, Murray, and his wife Christy decided to start a camp. To help them launch, I went to Arizona with Monica Lepore, her daughter Maria Lepore Stevens, and some of our college students. Tucson is set in the gorgeous Sonoran Desert along the banks of the Santa Cruz River and surrounded by four mountain ranges. It was hot there, really hot. So we did track and field in the early morning and swimming in the afternoon. Along with the heat, there were dust devils, those nasty little tornado-like swirls of hot wind that would pick up and scatter everything that wasn't anchored. Someone would yell, "Duck!" and we'd all go underwater to avoid the flying debris. The campers, of course, were used to heat and swirling dust. It was the East Coasters who had to adjust. My role at the camp was as a specialist. I taught swimming and track and field and helped anywhere else they needed me. One day, I was teaching the standing and running long jump, sweltering in the heat and drinking gallons of sports drinks. Two brothers, Jose and Bruno, were in a group with two other campers. While three in the group could do the running long jump, I thought it best for Bruno, who was blind, to start with the standing long jump. All four campers worked hard and were improving, but I noticed that Bruno was spending more and more time paying attention to progress and improvement of the boys doing the running long jump. Finally, the whistle blew and our station at long jump was over, to my great relief. I felt like I was going to melt away. After the other boys left, Bruno asked me if he could stay to learn the running long jump. I knew it would take him longer to learn it, but we decided to try. How would I say no? First, we paced off the approach. I showed him that his takeoff point would be where the texture of the ground changed. I marked the cadence with a clapping rhythm and said, "Go," when it was time to take off. He worked hard trying to time his takeoff with a push-off and to land on both feet. He learned that he had to time his arm swing and leg motion once he took off in order to propel his body forward. It was hard, sweaty work for both of us because it was so, so hot. On about the 12th try, Bruno finally got it and had some great flight time before landing on 2 feet. He came over to me and gave me a hug and said, "Lauren, thank you so much for taking time and believing in me." I learned so much that day. When Bruno first asked to do the running long jump, I was reluctant. After all, it would take a long time. I wasn't sure we could do it in a day, but I realized that despite the name of the camp I had started, I was letting myself be influenced by what I thought someone couldn't do instead of what they could. What I had overlooked was how much the athletes really want to learn and how much effort they'll put into achieving something that's important to them. We just need to believe in them and give them the opportunities. Bruno has become one of my many role models for achievement. After camp, he went back to school and joined his brother on the track team. An Arizona camper I met later in 2015 was Shay, then a 10th grader and a real go-getter. At the camp, she fell in love with tandem biking and chose that as her sport. Unfortunately, some of the bikes in Arizona were old and in poor condition. So after leaving the camp, Shay started a nonprofit foundation to raise money to buy bikes for the camp. She has raised enough to buy 3 new bikes so far. I tell this story when people mention obstacles holding back people who are blind or visually impaired. Shay, along with hundreds of others I've met and coached, consider obstacles to be challenges to overcome, not barriers. Camp Abilities Puerto Rico. Between 2002 and 2004, Dr. Margarita Fernandez and Dr. Ibrahim Cordero were studying for their PhDs at Florida State University in adapted physical education. For several summers, they came and volunteered at Camp Abilities in Brockport. They loved the experience. So when they went back in 2005 to teach at the University of Puerto Rico in Mayagüez, they started the first Camp Abilities in Puerto Rico. Katrina and I went that first summer. It was very hot there and poured rain each afternoon. I loved the campus, especially for all the mango trees. You could just pick up mangoes and eat them. Despite our lack of Spanish at the time, Katrina and I helped with swimming, goal ball, and track and field. The children loved being around other children like them, and they thrived with the individual attention. A favorite memory was when we took a bus to the home of the Lions Club president, right on the beach. His Lions Club came for a barbecue dinner, and the campers went kayaking on the ocean. The smells of the home-cooked meal, the ocean breeze, and the joy and laughter of the children made it a happy time for everyone. The local Lions helped with many other aspects of camp during that week. The Puerto Rico Camp Abilities went on successfully for many years, and then in 2017, college students all over the island went on strike over a tuition hike. Unfortunately, the camp had to be canceled that year due to the lack of student coaches. Then, in 2018, Hurricane Maria ravaged the island, but the professors and students were determined to hold the camp despite the lack of facilities at their home campus. Margarita and Ibrahim asked a local university that was not hit as hard if they could hold the camp there for one summer. At the same time, Maria Lepore Stevens, Monica's daughter, held a fundraiser selling t-shirts so they could replace equipment they had lost in the storm. The fundraiser was successful. The president of the local university then said yes. So they moved everything to the new university, and the camp was a huge achievement. The campers were especially happy to see each other after the devastating hurricane. Camp Abilities, Pennsylvania. Maria Lepore Stevens grew up coming to our Camp Abilities in Brockport. She attended our first camp when she was 7 years old. She demonstrated the sports, guided athletes around, and was immersed in sports for youth who are blind and visually impaired. Her summers were full of following her mother from Camp Abilities to Camp Abilities, and she helped us start the Camp Abilities in Alaska, Arizona, and Florida. It was not surprising then that in her senior year of high school in 2006, she chose to create Camp Abilities Pennsylvania as part of a Girl Scout leadership project. The planning committee decided to hold a 3-day camp on Memorial Day weekend, and the facilities at South Campus at Westchester University, my alma mater, were perfect. Since Westchester is also my hometown, my mother, father, stepmother, sister, brother, and nieces and nephews came to cheer on the kids. My father's Lions Club in Westchester supported the camp from the beginning. That first year, I arrived early and helped, just as Monica and Maria had helped me my first year. They had goal ball, track and field, tandem biking, and swimming. I was extremely impressed with the organization of the entire program. As I sat at the registration table, I was surprised to see one of my high school friends come in. His two daughters had albinism that affected their vision. "I can't tell you how happy this program has made me," he said. "It's the only place that is fully accessible for my daughters." I never imagined in high school that I might create a program that would benefit my friend's children. Westchester has an excellent nutrition program, and Monica and Maria recruited the professors and students to make nutritious meals for the athletes for the weekend. It's a smart partnership. Athletes learn how to make nutritious meals that help them become better athletes, while nutrition students learn how to teach nutrition to a variety of youth with disabilities. On the last day of the long weekend, the athletes get to choose a distance for their own personal triathlon. This provides tremendous motivation for them. The camp has benefited from all the very strong and talented students in the Physical Education Teacher Preparation Program at Westchester University. One student, Andy Jenks, was visually impaired and an elite goalball player, so he was able to teach the sport exceptionally well. While Andy was a student, he made the U.S. Paralympic goalball team and won a medal, which the campers found inspiring. One of the undergraduate students from those very first years was Beth Foster. Beth was a coach, then a specialist, and then she became one of the Camp Abilities Pennsylvania directors. After graduating from Westchester, she taught in Lancaster, Pennsylvania for several years and continued to run the camp. She then went on for her master's degree and PhD in adapted physical education at Texas Women's University and got a job at California Polytechnic University in Pomona, but she still continued to run the program with the Westchester, Pennsylvania team. After Monica Lepore retired in 2020, Dr. Beth Foster returned the following year to Westchester University, where she now teaches and continues the tradition of Camp Abilities as a director. The Camp Abilities in Westchester has grown beyond Memorial Day weekend to include several one-day programs throughout the year. These programs focus on the triathlon events and wellness, as well as blind sports. On the 10th anniversary of Camp Abilities Pennsylvania, I came and spoke. It was an emotional occasion for me. Speaking in my hometown, at my alma mater, with my family watching, I was so proud of what Monica and Maria and the entire staff had accomplished. Maria earned her undergraduate degree from Westchester University in math education with a minor in adapted physical education because of her involvement in Camp Abilities and her love of working with youth with visual impairments. She went to the University of Arizona for 2 years and earned her master's degree in orientation and mobility. She moved back to Pennsylvania and worked in Delaware as an orientation and mobility specialist. She then earned her doctorate from Westchester, went on to teach adapted physical education at Rowan University in New Jersey, and continued to run camp at Westchester, Delaware, and two camps in Arizona. She plans to start a Camp Abilities in New Jersey at Rowan University. The expansions to Alaska, Arizona, Puerto Rico, and Pennsylvania were only the beginning. Since then, Camp Abilities has expanded to many other states and to countries throughout the world. In the process, children with visual impairments have learned not only athletics, but self-advocacy. I am continually inspired watching our athletes, counselors, and coaches develop leadership skills that enable them to carry the work forward. And I am extremely proud that Camp Abilities has become a springboard for many to careers helping people with visual impairments or other disabilities.